Ron Ananian.
Cars are like life, and life is like cheap underwear. You never know when it's going to creep up on you. And it does. When you least expect it, boom, there it is in your face.
The Car Doctor.
The last few weeks have definitely been a hot topic on electric cars and how you think that they're definitely they're trying to push them too fast, and I 100% agree with you.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
So, you think it's time for an electric vehicle. What could possibly go wrong? 2001 Toyota Prius came into the shop this week at RA Automotive. Yep, 2001. Now, you can sit there and say, gee, that's an old car. But is it? It's 20 years old. But how many of you have a 15 to 20-year-old car? Raise your hand, right? In the family or in the neighborhood. It's not that uncommon. Cars last a long time. And this 2001 Prius, which are pretty indestructible, they seem to last a good long while, needs a battery. Not the hybrid battery. The auxiliary battery, the traditional battery, if that's what you will understand. You know, the one that we've always had to replace to make the car start, the electrical battery in the rear of the vehicle. Well, that battery is not available. You can't buy that battery for love of money. Talk to Toyota. Talk to every one of my supply houses. Talk to battery manufacturers. There does not seem to be a battery for a 2001 Toyota Prius in the country. Toyota can't even give me an availability date. Maybe 2 months. Maybe. I might see it by May. What do you tell that person? And okay, it's a 20-year-old vehicle. I get that. But it's such a unique vehicle. Just like most electric vehicles will be such a unique vehicle. And this is what I said was going to happen, in that we are going to create this uniqueness of environment and equipment, that the similarity between a 2003 perhaps and a 2001 doesn't carry over, or a 2001 and a 2002, whatever it might be. You know, you could take a Group 51 and swap it in for a Group 26 battery where you had to, if you had to, on the average car. There are certain batteries that can interchange and swap out. But for whatever reason, this Prius has no cross-reference, has no... It just doesn't exist. And the funny thing is, there is a tractor battery of some kind in the vehicle, but it's not reliable. It doesn't start on a consistent basis. It doesn't maintain charge. It doesn't do what it's supposed to do. And so obviously the owner wants to put the right battery in. Hey, you know, somebody wants to fix the car right. What a great idea. What a concept. But they can't. You know, I'm going to put it out to you guys, Car Doctor Nation. Got a source? 2001 Toyota Prius. Can't be hard. The auxiliary battery. Somebody's got to have one. I'm curious, if you have one or if you know of one, shoot me a note, ron@cardoctorshow.com. Number one, I'd like to help the customer out. Number two, I'd like to see if there's something out there in the country. Maybe there's a Toyota dealer with one in stock, but Toyota showed zero stock, zero availability, and it just doesn't exist. And I thought, wow, you know, where is this craziness going to end? Because we're at the beginning of it. This is clearly the beginning of what I'll call the electric car kaboom. Maybe it's not a boom. Maybe it's a kaboom, because parts are going to become an issue. We had an 85 Toyota Corolla in the shop this week. 85. You heard me say that correctly. Okay. 36-year-old vehicle. And the owner, young man in his late 20s, early 30s, Paul is, he picked it up on eBay. He's going to make it a hot rod. Yeah, I know. I'm trying to get them to understand. But you know what? I don't pick on somebody for their choice of love of a car. You know what? Everybody's got something that turns their hot button. I understand all of it. Well, almost all of it. And you know, it's just, I had to cobble this car back together, but I was able to. I was able to get by the auxiliary idle valve that didn't exist. I was able to find a mass airflow sensor. I found the last mass airflow sensor, or air mass meter is really what it is, on an 85 Corolla in the region. I was able to find some of the last of the parts on a almost 40-year-old car. But I can't find a battery for a 2001 Prius. I can find all these odd little things for a gas engine vehicle that's almost 40 years old. All the obscure things. And I was able to cobble the car together and make it work. I was able to get him to drive it home yesterday. He was such a happy camper. Zooming along on a gorgeous sunny day in New Jersey. But I can't get a battery for a 2001 Prius. And it makes me wonder, you know, is that it? Is that the life cycle? Now we have to scrap that car? Is that car gone? And how long has that battery not been available? Because that car has been running around with that incorrect battery that we know of after talking to the vehicle owner for at least 18 months, a year and a half. It's been since it came up from Florida, and the battery was put in down in Florida some time ago. Now we know the reason why. I'm not sure where this is going. I'm concerned, as you should be too. So, you know, I'll leave you with this thought as we kick off this hour of the Car Doctor. Someone born this year is probably not going to have to go for a driver's license. Someone born this year is probably not going to start driving in an internal combustion engine vehicle. They're just going to know electric vehicles. And I ask myself, starting to sound like my father might have, what's that going to look like? God, how will they ever know what the experience is that I've had? How will they connect? How will we connect? How will it affect society? God, I'm getting old. In any event, just something to be aware of, but think about it. Common everyday parts, maybe they're not going to be so common, and maybe they're not going to be so every day. Hello and welcome. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor here. I'm glad to have you aboard, and I want to thank you for taking the time to stop by. I see Tom Ray is clear cut in my brandy new, spanking brandy new, studio cam.
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
So, you know, it's been great up till now, but now I can see you.
Yeah, now it's good. Now it's a good thing. Well, should we tell everybody why we did this? We've been trying to do this for a while, and we finally figured out, you know, we were overthinking it. Well, we need to get one of these and one of these and one of these. And we just go out and point two cameras. We're done.
Yeah. And up on Facebook, we're done. But the reason we did it was we had a little issue last week where the internet on my side of the glass over here went away, and so did we.
And, you know, Tom, I don't like to think of that as an incident.
Right.
It's a
learning experience.
I like to think of that as, you know, if you've seen The Sopranos, it was that moment in The Sopranos when Tony's sitting in the ice cream parlor, and all of a sudden the screen went blank. It forever in Car Doctor history will be known as that Tony Soprano event, because it was just like all of a sudden we were there, and then all of a sudden.
But we weren't playing Journey.
No. And I'm going, Tom. So in any event, we've taken some action to circumvent that, you know, and that's in a way, Tom, that was sort of like working on cars in a way. You know, how do you deal with that? We never even dreamed anything like that could happen, where I'd have a connection and you wouldn't. And I guess it's like fixing an oddball car, right? You sort of learn something that, you know, and there's the learning curve, and away we go, right?
And it was kind of like fixing cars from the standpoint that I used every four-letter word in my vocabulary during that 60-second time frame.
I don't know any four-letter words, Tom.
You're right.
I'm a good boy. So let me pull over and take a pause.
Your halo is supported by your horns.
That's right. As long as nobody can see those, we're in good shape. Let me pull over, take a pause. When we come back, we'll get over to Steven in San Diego and see what's going out California way. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Tom Ray, executive producer. We'll both be back right after this.
Keep Ron's number handy, 855-560-9900, for when you really need advice on your car. Here's Ron.
Hey, let's get over to Steven in San Diego and talk to him about his 13 Explorer. Steven, welcome aboard, sir. How can I help?
Hello, Ron.
Yes,
last week you talked about Ford Explorers. You said they need PTUs, they need water pumps, and other than that, they're pretty good cars. It's some pretty major surgery, but I've done my PTU, and now I have a P0016 to
good.
Deal with.
So now you can do the water pump when you do the timing chain.
Right. Then what should my expectation be on how much that's going to take money-wise? I looked at the technical service bulletins about those timing chains and phases and stuff. This is like 10 hours. Is that correct? Or
yeah,
should I be looking at more?
It's 10 hours on a good day if you've done the job a few
right.
times. And it's also some specialty tools if you're planning to do it yourself. You know, when you've got to have the capacity, you've got to lift at home, you've got a workspace at home. You're not doing this in a parking lot in front of an apartment building, right?
Well, I'm not going to do it myself. I haven't got time. I'd like to, but I'm going to have to pay someone. I got probably 20.5 hours at $180 an hour, so I left.
Yeah. No, you're probably... Well, I know the job this way. In North Jersey dollars, all right, and I have to quote it that way because I don't know what... You know, I know the labor rate for the dealer that I'm thinking of here in North Jersey is $135 an hour. So at $135 an hour to do a water pump, a timing chain, and the guides and the accessory, rollers, coolant, et cetera, is about $3,500. So, you know, there's probably $800 in parts there. So back it out that way. So it's probably $2,500 in labor at $130. That's probably close to 20 hours.
Oh, really?
That seems to be the number. Yeah, it's quite a bit of work. It's quite a bit of work. It is the weak link on a Ford. Before we jump the gun and just go right to a timing chain, let's talk a little bit about P0016. P0016 is setting because the ECU is seeing an incorrect relationship in cam timing between the cam and the crank sprocket. If you were to look at the VCT PID or the valve timing solenoid, I'm sorry, the valve timing solenoid for cylinder one, compared it to two and then compared it to the rest of it, you're probably going to see one show something other than zero in terms of a value. And that's because it's picking up the slop of the chain as it's coming around and it's showing the cam advanced or retarded against the other bank when it's not supposed to be, and that's how the code sets.
The second guy I took it to, he decided to change one of the sensors. I guess it's the bank one sensor.
Right.
Right now it doesn't have the code, so I'm enjoying that, but I'm fully expecting it to come back on.
Are you the original owner, Stephen?
Yes.
Okay. Have you been good about your oil changes?
Religiously, it's gone to the Ford dealer every time the little sticker says it needs to.
Okay, and this is the V6, correct? I didn't ask that question.
It's the sport, so it has the turbos.
Right. And the turbos, you know, the turbos are great. They build a lot of power. The problem is, and I would encourage you to let the dealer or someone that's done the job before to do it. Because getting the turbos apart, the exhaust manifolds are going to be brittle from heat, from all the heat cycles, hot and cold and up and down, off and on. And depending upon weather conditions and environment in San Diego compared to what I've seen in New Jersey, you know, getting the turbos and the manifolds apart is going to be a major ordeal. And, you know, you want to allow them the time. The other thing you want to consider is when they've got it apart, there is an oil feed line coming off both turbos that bolts. One end goes to the engine, obviously. The other engine is the oil feed to the turbo itself. Take a look at those when you get them apart, the oil feed lines to the turbos. If they're rusted or cruddy or beat up in any kind of condition, change them. That's the moment, you know.
Okay.
What I would tell you is before you do this, so the vehicle's got what? I'm going to assume 100,000 miles on it?
80.
So at 80,000 miles, let's play the game. The vehicle is 8 years old. Am I doing my math right? So it's 8 years old with 80. You've had the PTU issue. You've solved that. You're going to go through timing chain and water pump. You know, if 2 years from now this vehicle needed a trans and you had to put a trans in it, you know where I'm going, right? And it's it's $5,000.
Well, that's what both the garages said. They're like, oh, yeah, this might be the timing chain, in which case you should buy a new car.
Well, no. Like, now I'm not saying that. I'm just saying know what you're getting into because – so it's $5,000 for the – let's say it's $5,000 for the chain. $5,000 is a nice round number, all right? And, you know, part of that is somebody out there just now on the show just went, because they're hearing $5,000, right? You know, we throw $5,000 around like it was – like it's 20 bucks. But the fact is to replace that car today with something comparable – and I don't care what you buy. I don't care if it's a Ford Explorer XLT or – Platinum or a Lexus, you know, RX 350 or whatever, something of that size, value, you know, luxury level of ride, etc. That's a $60,000 car today.
Correct.
And you know, if done properly, so you're going to put $5,000 in it now. You're going to put $5,000 in it in 2 years, but you didn't have 2 years of payments. You didn't have because I assume the car is paid for, right, by now.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it's properly maintained. You know, for years I've always spouted the it's $125 a month to maintain a car because that's what I read in the trends and the reports. And then the more exotic the car gets or the more high level, so to speak, and I think the easiest way I used to describe it was if it was European, thinking BMW, Jaguar, Audi, Mercedes, you know, you could spend $250 a month to maintain those cars. Look at the level of ride. Look at what the car cost. There's nothing you can buy today, and I know this is a silly statement, but it's true and it has to be said. There's nothing you can buy today that's easy or free or cheap to keep, right? It's always going to take something. I think the point...
I'd like to think it doesn't bust half the transmission and half the engine after 80,000 miles.
Right.
That, you know, what's done is done. I've bought it now.
Right. And I don't think it will either. I'm just trying to prepare for the, you know, we're having the heart attack. What if we need hip surgery after the fact? I just want us prepared, all right, mentally. All right. My point becomes that to replace that vehicle is today $60,000. What will it be in 2 years? It'll be 70. So just be mildly aware, Stephen. I would go back and ask for a breakout from the dealership of parts. What do they normally put in it? What could you normally expect the turbos to do in terms of cost? It's obviously going to add a few dollars, and you want to look at the complete package and get it done, and get it done properly. Good luck to you. I'm here if you need more. I'm Ron Anani and the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We're on Andy the Car Doctor. Let's get over to Al in Long Island with a 2010 Dodge Journey and some problems with a no start. Al, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Yeah, so I got this car. I drove it home, parked it in the driveway, you know, went and got it registered. And I want to use it just as a local runner. You know, it's got 144,000 miles on it.
Okay.
But the body and the interior is perfect.
Right.
So I go to start the car after I get the registration, and the car won't start. It just won't start. It'll like kick, but it won't start.
Okay.
So we fluttered around with it. I had a mechanic come. He scanned it. He said there was a problem with corrosion in the relay box.
Right.
So he cleaned that up, and then he said, oh, yeah, I can get communication through the ODB, and there's nothing coming up, but yet the car wouldn't start. Now, subsequently, like since last week when I called you, I remembered that I had put batteries in the key fobs. So I took the batteries out of both key fobs, and then the car started right up. So I'm thinking that it was like a wind module.
Well, back up a minute here, Al. Is it that it wouldn't crank or it wouldn't start?
Wouldn't start.
So it would crank.
Yeah.
If it cranked, then the key fob had communication, and it's not a key fob, it's called a phobic. your phobic was okay. All right. Everything with Chrysler, like everything else today, is you know, abbreviations. But they call it the FOB with integrated key, or a phobic. What happens is the phobic has to talk to the WIN, which is the wireless ignition node, inside the vehicle, as part of the function that, hey, Al wants to start the car, start the car. So you've got a button in the dash, or you've got a slot where you insert the key?
Slot.
So if it cranked, now this could be a communication fault with the phobic, in that the WIN or the wireless ignition node lost communication capability. Where I would have gone is, did he look at just OBD2 for codes, or did he do a complete scan of the vehicle?
Complete scan.
Okay. And all he came up with no codes.
That's right.
Okay. So if there was a communication problem with the key, it would have said faults in the body computer or the scream, which is part of the anti-theft system.
Right.
So if it happens again, what I would tell you to do is have your mechanic look at the scream, which is the anti-theft, and have him look specifically for, there's going to be a PID, parameter ID, piece of information there, that says valid skim key, yes or no. Or yes or true. Okay. It should show yes. Yes or true, depending upon the software.
Yeah, he already did that. It does say valid. Yes.
Okay. If it says valid, then this isn't a fault with the key.
Right. But the problem is, with the batteries out of the key fob, I have to open the door with the key, the car starts. If I put the fob back in, I keyed the batteries back in the key fob, the car won't start.
Are the keys? That doesn't make any sense. Are the keys programmed to the vehicle properly?
I know. I don't
so,
know.
So you're telling me, with the batteries out of the fobs, now the car starts?
Yes.
Okay. So.
And no lights on the dash, no check engine light, anything. Starts perfect.
Okay, and if
when I bought the car, the key fob batteries were dead. It wouldn't open the door.
Then I've got to think somehow you've erased the programming for the fobs. It's got to be.
Okay.
It's got to be.
All right.
So now you've got to go through. But were the fobs working prior to you taking the batteries in and out?
No.
Back up here.
No,
a second.
The fobs weren't working. Then.
So the fobs have never worked. They've always started the car.
Yeah. Actually, let me give you one other piece of information. When I first opened the car door, I opened it with the key, the horn would honk. And then I put the key in the ignition and the horn stopped honking.
Okay, because it's seeing an anti-theft event. It's seeing that because it doesn't see the fob in terms of function for that it's near or programmed to that vehicle. I bet you those fobs aren't programmed to that vehicle, or they're not programmed correctly. There's something amiss with the way that vehicle is recognizing those keys.
Okay. Good. Do you think that if I went and had a key fob made by the VIN number, that would work?
No. What I would do is I would take both keys, take it to somebody that has locksmith capability, and ask them to verify, A, the keys are programmed to the car, and that, B, if you put batteries in it, they can run a functional test to see, do the fobs themselves work?
Okay.
You got this car used?
Yes.
Do both fobs, will both keys start the car if you put it in the slot?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Let's start with programming. Let's do some basic locksmith programming and work your way out from there. All right. Why don't those fobs work? Because that defies logic. All right, sir?
Yeah. And putting the batteries in the car completely goes back to not starting.
Right. Because now it's reading the fobs. So are those programmed correctly? And since this is a used car with no history, we've got to think that something is amiss here. So let's do it that way. All right, kiddo.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're very welcome. You be well.
Yeah, because otherwise someone will tell me WIN module and scrap the car because it's going to cost too much more.
Let's not go there. Let's wait in terms of. Let's get it diagnosed. All right, kiddo.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Be well. Let's get on over and go to where are we going next, Tom? Let's go to Ken in Wisconsin, 95 Buick LeSabre. Ken, welcome aboard, sir. How can I help? Yes, sir.
Yeah, I got a 1995 Buick LeSabre that when you go to start the car up, it's almost like you're leaving the key on too long. It's the starter will grind a little bit. You can hear grinding on the starter. And after the car started, there you can hear it's metal to metal. Like it's continued, like a ping, not a ping, it's loud noise.
It almost sounds like you're describing like the starter drive is stuck on. Is it a noise similar to if the vehicle were running and you went to start it, you're hearing that mechanical clash?
That's how it sounds when I try to start the car.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then after it starts, the starter drive, or it almost sounds like the starter drive is staying out and it's catching the flywheel.
Right. That's what I'm thinking it's doing.
And what we did is I thought it might have been something else because the power steering pulley was loose or had a little play in it. So actually, I replaced the power steering thing, but it didn't do nothing. But when you start the car without the belt on, it doesn't grind. It doesn't make no noise.
When you start the car without the belt on, the starter doesn't make noise.
Yeah, the starter doesn't make any, doesn't grind, and then that noise afterwards is not there.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. Is this a full moon show? It's got to be. I've had two calls in a row that make no sense to me. So my first question would be, is it a charging issue?
We tested that. It's charging.
Well, no. It's got to have something to do with the only thing you're disabling when you take the belt off the vehicle is you're disconnecting and disabling the... Well, let's see now. No, actually, there's two things you're doing there. If we really want to get crazy, and I'll play the game, you're doing, see what the charging rate is. Charging rate with the belt on, running the car is probably a little over 14 volts. If you unplug the alternator and start the car, so now it's not charging, does the problem go away? If the problem doesn't go away, it doesn't have anything to do with the alternator charging or not charging. Now I'm going to tell you somehow that belt is pulling the crank forward and changing the position of the flywheel in relation to the starter. But boy, that's a reach. There's got to be some wicked end play in that crank for it to do that.
Yeah. I understand what you mean there.
All right. So maybe what you want to do is with the belt off, up in the air, if you can find a spot and just, give the crank a tug, does it look like it's exceeding its end play? Because think about it. What else is there? We've either got a mechanical interference or a mechanical clash, or we've got an electrical issue, and I can't see electrically why a starter would work better with less voltage. That doesn't add up. So
I had the belt off when I replaced the power steering pump because the pulley on the power steering pump was wobbling a little bit.
Well,
and I thought, well, maybe that's it, but that wasn't it.
Right. So is the belt still off?
Yes.
Okay. So, with the belt off, why don't you give a tug to the crank pulley? Just look at end play. Are you changing position that much? And then after that, go and look at voltage. But you're looking for a reason why it occurs like that. And we'll kind of go from there. And call me back next week, and you can let me know what's going on. All right, kiddo. Good deal. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Welcome back. We're on the Car Doctor here at 855-560-9900. Rolling along this hour. Let's go over to John in Virginia, 99 Toyota Tacoma. John, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hey, Car Doctor.
Yes, sir.
My Tacoma has got 206,000 miles on it.
Wait for it.
It's developing a
shutter. Wait for it. Just broken in, brother. Go ahead.
Exactly. We're just getting started here.
Yep.
I had another Tacoma that put 450,000 miles on it before I sold it and didn't use a drop of oil. So
yep.
This one, I love the machine, is starting to develop a shutter in fifth gear. Around 50 miles an hour originally. Now it persists up to about 55 miles an hour. I go faster than that, it subsides. But interestingly enough, let's say 53 if I have that shutter in fifth gear, and I downshift into fourth, it completely goes away. So the shutter is unique to fifth gear.
So
I've never had anything like this on any transmission.
So it's safe to say it's really It's not speed related, it's load related. Right? It's how the engine is handling the load. So because you're telling me let's use a round number. At 55 miles an hour it's got to shake in fifth. You downshift to fourth and bring it back up to 55.
It'll
shake again, right? It's speed related.
If I remain in fourth and go up to 55, there's no shake at all. It's only when I switch into fifth gear at that 55 miles an hour you can feel it.
Right. So what's the dynamic that changed is not speed, it's engine load and RPM. So the question is, at that same RPM load in a lower gear at a lesser speed, would the vehicle shake like that?
No.
Okay. So it's only at, oh, let's say 1500 RPM in fifth gear at 55 miles an hour.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. So one of the thoughts that would go through my mind, there's a dynamic, there's a harmonic vibration here that's low level that you can't, you can't see it, you're just experiencing it. Is it that do we have rock hard engine and trans mount? And that's a reach. I agree. I'm just talking off the top of my head. One of the first things I'd love to see is I'd love to see if I have the ability on a scan tool where fuel trim, how it changes and where it goes. I'd also like to see calculated load value, which is a measurement of air intake coming into the engine. And, if I could duplicate that, in other words, you've only got two instruments in front of you, right? You've got RPM and speed, miles per hour. Can I get more data with a scan tool? Can I prove that it at 55 miles an hour at 1500 when this thing's shaking, it's got 60% calculated load and fuel trim is showing, leaner than normal? Is that telling me something? Because what I'm thinking about at this age and mileage, and I'm assuming, which is a dangerous word, spark plugs are good. This isn't ignition misfire. This isn't the beginning of an ignition miss or something like that. What we're getting into is perhaps we need to do some fuel system maintenance. And it probably wouldn't be a bad idea at 209,000 miles, right? To maybe do something, a little Berryman fuel system cleaning and throttle body stuff just to kind of cover the bases. So
sure.
I'll tell you what, stay right where you are. Let me just put you on hold. Let me pull over, take a pause, and come back, and we'll finish up. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Welcome back, Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. John, you're still there, sir.
I am here.
Can
we roll out with some high level of certainty that this is an engine related shake versus a transmission?
Well, and it's funny. I was thinking about that during the break. I don't see why it would be trans, because why doesn't it do it in fifth gear at 45 miles an hour?
Well, it does.
Oh, it does.
It does. Yeah, and generally you don't want to, unless there's no load and I'm coasting. I would used to use fifth gear just as an economy. Never under load, of course. I'd wait till I get up to higher speed, but it does. It starts at, my goodness, 40, and it'll persist up to 55, and then it kind of weans off at 55.
Okay. Can we just, for giggles, if we want to eliminate things, let's get away from what it's doing to tell me what's good or bad on the vehicle. Have you pulled the drive shaft just to look at the joints?
Yes, I pulled the drive shaft, had it rebalanced, and we replaced one of the joints.
Was the joint bad?
Just slightly loose.
Right.
We checked the hanger bearing. I replaced the hanger bearing as well. So, and the drive shaft was rebalanced. So we got that out of the equation.
And the drive shaft is straight, obviously, because there's a difference between straight and balanced and so forth. Good. So you've eliminated the drive shaft. So if there's no faults in the engine at that point, and it does it from 40 on up.
Yep.
I just wonder about it being a mount. Is the mount really hard, John? Is it rock hard and dried out at this mileage? Real quick, tell me.
How about this? I'm going to check that out and get back to you.
All right, get back to me. Call me next week and we'll kind of go over it from there. Let's just consider the mount. Could the mount be the issue? I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Thanks for stopping by this hour. Till the next time, remember, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.